engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
Greetings, conversationalists. I hope you're well. It is Friday, and I am Eric Erickson, your host across the nation. The phone number is 877-973-7425, should you wish to be on the program. I need to send some love to those of you in Sacramento. You know, so I'm on in Sacramento now. I've only been on for a couple months, and I'm on in delay, evening drive, essentially, their time. And yesterday, I happened to notice a large number of orders for my book came through, and they were all from the Sacramento listening audience on KSTE. So thank you very much for listening. This is one reason I like the whole texting app approach, just because I can kind of monitor where people are from. I find it very fascinating that those of you around the country, and you listen on podcast or you're on the live stream in areas. We've got listeners all over the place who listen on the live stream now, and y'all can all participate in the show. And I love it. I really genuinely love it. I hope y'all will consider coming to see me in person in August in Atlanta. I know it's a hike for some of you, but we're making it worthwhile. Kevin Stitt, the governor of Oklahoma, has confirmed he's going to be there. We're trying to lock in Ron DeSantis on the schedule right now and Greg Abbott from Texas. We've got Brian Kemp and Doug Ducey. We've got, who else do we have? We've got a number of congressmen, senators. We're working with the RNC to get the chairman of the RNC there and some folks from the Trump campaign. And we will have a great event in Atlanta in person August 9th and 10th. The welcome reception will be the night of the 8th. Glenn Youngkin, the governor of Virginia, is going to be there the night of the 8th. So come join us. You can text the word ENGAGE to 33777. Grab a ticket. Come to Atlanta. Hang out with us for a few days in person. It'll be a fun time. Text ENGAGE to 33777. Now, we must move on to other news. And I don't want to pick on Charlie. I was going to say something and pick on him, but don't really want to. He just suggested that I pick up the piece I wrote this morning and spend some more time with it. I had talked about it yesterday, which was the inspiration for me writing about it this morning. But I do think there's more to be said, particularly as I got attacked on social media yesterday by some of these little alt-right kids. For years, friends of mine who are right-wing activists have complained that what the establishment Republicans have often done is they dangle a shiny object in front of us, and they want us to look at this shiny object, this thing that makes us feel good that they did, so that we ignore all of their failures. And they've done that for years, the establishment has. And it, particularly, you know, when abortion was still a thing before Dobbs, the Republicans, they would pass like a late-term abortion bill or something they knew the court would probably strike down, but they would pass it. It would make everybody feel good and pay no attention that they just slipped Planned Parenthood funding back in the budget. Or they'd pass a big defense bill. They would expand defense, but pay no attention to they put DEI funding in the defense budget. And the establishment would do that. And they would hang these shiny things in front of us and say, look at the shiny thing. Look, no, don't look over there. Don't look over there. Look back here. Look at this thing. And oftentimes it was something the establishment knew would get declared unconstitutional by the Supreme Court. But they could do it knowing that everybody would seal clap. Everybody would say, oh, this is wonderful. Oh, this is so wonderful. Yay, look at what you did. And they'd be so distracted by it, they'd ignore all the bad stuff. And for years, right-wing activists complained about this. And now guess what? It's the right-wing activists who are doing the same damn thing. Clapping with delight, being distracted by their own side, hoping you don't pay attention. I have been accused in the last 24 hours of being a Quisling and being one of those conservatives the left props up so that we can explain away our losses and make you feel better about losing to the left and whatnot. Why? Because I think the Louisiana law to put the Ten Commandments in classrooms is dumb. No, I'm not opposed to the Ten Commandments in classrooms. In fact, when I was a student in public school in Louisiana, the classrooms had the Ten Commandments on all the walls. Only one teacher didn't have it. So local church group donated the signs. They were posters, pretty large size posters. In fact, they were larger, so the Louisiana law says they got to be at least 11 by 17. That's essentially 2 8.5 by 11 pages touched together. The ones on our classroom walls were bigger than that. They were probably 22 by 17. And I think the Ten Commandments are fantastic, and they should be studied in classrooms. The Ten Commandments should be studied for this reason. When all of Western civilization were filthy savages living in dung huts, the Jews were carrying forth law to humanity. When all the white people, tribes of Europe, were savages, the Jews were prescribing law and order to civilization. Study Hammurabi's code and contrast that with the Ten Commandments. Historically, the Ten Commandments have been good for the development of Western civilization, and there is history you can give there. There is literature you can give there. I think the Ten Commandments should be studied in public schools as part of the curriculum, as part of the history. Hanging them on the wall doesn't do anything. The problem here is that the state of Louisiana passed this legislation, when it passed this legislation, to distract conservatives from losing. And the little social media brain biblical donkeys who think this is the greatest thing ever are such little idiots that they've been betrayed by conservative legislators in Louisiana, and they're seal clapping over the Ten Commandments. How are they betrayed? The state of Louisiana, on the exact same day, in roughly the exact same hour, passed legislation gutting school choice in Louisiana. But hey, they're going to put the Ten Commandments on the wall. Have you heard conservatives cheering on the Ten Commandments talk about that? No, they've been cheering. Look, Louisiana made it universal school choice in Louisiana with education savings accounts. Here's what they did, actually. Louisiana already had school choice. They expanded the education savings accounts and made them universal. And then they didn't appropriate money. Just enough for about 10% of the poorest of the poor to get out of public schools, and that is the demographic least likely to take advantage of the program. And then they chose not to perpetually fund them, but to make it an annual appropriation. Every year, the school choice program in Louisiana now stands to be underfunded or not funded at all. And guess what? There's a budget shortfall in the state. So all these little idiots on social media who think passing the Ten Commandments is the greatest thing are completely distracted from the fact that Louisiana has just made it virtually impossible for families to pull their kids out of public schools with school choice because they gutted the program. And yet everyone's saying, oh, they passed universal school choice. No, you idiots. They gutted the funding of it. They passed it and made sure it couldn't be implemented. That's what they did. By the way, the governor also vetoed common sense tort reform that would have lowered costs for families in Louisiana because the trial lawyers gave him a big fat check for his campaign. Pay no attention to that. We got a Ten Commandment poster on the wall that's going to do nothing, particularly when more than half the kids in third grade can't even read. It's all for show. It makes you feel good. I've seen people, you can't be a conservative if you oppose putting the Ten Commandments on the wall. I totally support putting the Ten Commandments on the wall and put it into the curriculum, but this was a stupid law that's going to be struck down by the Supreme Court. Why? How do I know this for certain? Well, because there is a case called Stone versus Graham from 1980. Let's see if this sounds familiar. The legislature of Kentucky passed a law saying that every classroom in the state must post the Ten Commandments on the wall, but the state won't provide money. It would be funded by private donations. The Supreme Court said that's unconstitutional. The Louisiana statute is a mirror of the Kentucky statute. What they're trying to do here is the Supreme Court in Kennedy versus Bremerton School District last year, or 2 years ago, struck down Lemon versus Kurtzman. The Lemon test is the test to say whether or not the state and religion can coexist in the town square. And in every single way the test is designed, it strikes down religion from the town square if public funding comes into play. It struck down. It was a terrible case. I'm glad they struck it down, but that wasn't the fundamental basis for Stone versus Graham. Here's how Louisiana could have passed this law in a way that would have avoided judicial scrutiny. One, they could have said no school board district can punish a teacher for posting the Ten Commandments on the wall. Two, they could have encouraged local churches just through a resolution to provide copies of the Ten Commandments for any teacher who wanted it. Accomplishes the same purpose, but it doesn't make it mandatory to run afoul of the Establishment Clause. They could have done it that way. But they didn't. They wanted to virtue signal their side in the culture war in a way that's going to be struck down unconstitutionally, but in a way that will excite the base, so the base pays no attention to the fact that they killed school choice. The exact same hour of the exact same day of the legislature, they killed school choice for most people in Louisiana. But pay no attention to that. How easily the base of the party can be distracted by shiny objects. We could have made school choice permanent and funded it in Louisiana and gotten kids out of the failing public schools, but no, said we're going to put a poster on the wall. The problem here is the people who are supposedly the brilliant strategic thinkers, they really like to lose because they fight. That's what I heard. Well, if you're not going to fight for this, well, when you fight for everything, you know what you wind up doing? You wind up losing. You lose a lot of fights. If every hill is a hill to die on, you die on every hill. But these people would rather own the libs than own the future. Losing is a feature to them. It's not a bug, it's a feature. Because if you lose but you get people whipped up into a frenzy, they write checks for you to fight harder next time. And they fight harder next time and they lose again. If they won, people would move on. And then they blame people who actually want to win for refusing to engage in failure theater. Time and time again, those of you on the right, are you tired of losing? Here's why you're losing. You're losing because you've put in charge a group of people who only know how to lose and make money off of the loss, because they tell you they were unfair on the other side. They cheated. That's why we lost. We're going to win again next time. Send us some money. Instead of actually engaging in fights, they could actually win. In the state of Louisiana, they're going to put a poster on a wall with the Ten Commandments in classrooms where more than half the class is illiterate. If the Supreme Court lets them, which is a big if, they could have instead allowed the kids in that classroom to go to a successful private school so they would not continue to be in a failing public school. They could have sent them to a religious school that has the Ten Commandments on the wall and teaches them from religious context. But no, they chose not to do that. They chose to go a path most likely unconstitutional to whip you into a frenzy and get you all excited and have you attack anyone who says this is a dumb idea because of the way they've deployed it. And guess what? It's working. Apparently, people on the right would rather lose and cash in than fight smartly and win. And this is why the left keeps winning, because we are being run on the right by a group of losers who cash in on losing and have never any intention of actually winning.
Want to be on the show?
Hello?
I love your show.
Call Eric now at 877-973-7425. Get the podcast, live stream, email, and social media links by texting Eric to 33777 now.
Greetings. Welcome. It's Eric Erickson here. The phone number is 877-973-7425. Should you wish to be on the program, I would be delighted to have you. I can't say what I want to say. I have to move on before I get myself in trouble. Okay. Let me move on to DEI people being so stupid. You know, one of the most absurd things I think that has happened in our society is the new speak, particularly progressives in the never letting a crisis go to waste, the George Floyd thing, demanded that we change our language. So master bedroom is now primary bedroom because there were slave connotations. Never mind that master bedroom had nothing to do with the master and slave. It did not. Now you see primary bedroom. No, it's the master bedroom and the master bath. It's just stupid. We're going to make it primary. How do you know it's the primary bedroom? Now, those of you who are pilots, y'all, the number of Delta pilots and Southwest pilots who listen to me in Atlanta, it's kind of funny. It's stopping at going to the airport now. It's just very funny. The Airline Pilots Association International represents 70,000 pilots worldwide and states that it collaborates with the United Nations Agency on its policies. And according to a diversity, equity, and inclusion language guide, the Airline Pilots Association has decided we gotta change the language on planes, including cockpit. It might be used in a derogatory way to exclude women from the piloting profession. Really? The cockpit might be used in a derogatory way. How about firing the people who use it in the derogatory way? As opposed to, let's change the name. Many women have heard a variation of it called a cockpit for a reason by a male pilot suggesting women would not want to be a pilot. Really? Why don't you deal with those people instead of changing the language? Also, we got to get rid of manpower, y'all. Got to get rid of, good Lord, these people. DEI is just stupid. Now, what's not stupid is going to Vision Computers to get your computer. They can build you a computer that saves you money and is better than the computer that you've got. Instead of one size fits all, it's going to be made for you. Now, here's the other thing. Let's say you need tech help, but you don't have a computer from Vision. It doesn't matter. They can still help you. All you do is call them at 404-COMPUTE. 404-COMPUTE. You begin a relationship with Vision Computers. 404-COMPUTE. Call Vision Computers and say, hey, look, I need tech support. In 15 seconds or less, you can get your answers faster than a Google search. They'll tell you how to do something. If you've lost a file on your computer, they can help you find it. They do email support, printer support, $179 a year. VisionComputers.com or 404-COMPUTE. You don't have to have bought a computer from them. If you did, it comes free. The tech support comes free. If you didn't, for that small fee, they can be your tech support. Call them and tell them I sent you. You get an even better deal. 404-COMPUTE or VisionComputers.com. 404-COMPUTE. Call them today.
Smart, fearless, and occasionally funny. You're listening to the Eric Erickson Show.
Greetings this Open Line Friday. The phone number is 877-973-7425. Should you wish to be on the program, Brian, you're going to be up next. Welcome to the show. Brian, how are you?
Good afternoon, Eric. How are you?
I'm great.
I'd like to make a statement and ask a question about why nobody in talk radio has been talking about this. Then I'm going to make this statement and ask you for the implications. Then I'm going to hang up and let you respond and listen to what you have to say. It'll be great.
All right.
President Trump, former President Trump, can never, ever go to jail unless he wants to. And that has implications for the upcoming sentencing in July. He is a former president of the United States of America. How do people go to jail? Through threat of force or force? Neither one of those can be imposed upon a former president of the United States. He has Secret Service protection for life. If a police officer were to attempt to come up and handcuff him, all he's got to do is point at one of his Secret Service staff and point to the cop, and that's it. It's over.
Okay.
And that's all I have.
All right. So I'll let you hang up, and I'll respond. That's actually not the case. Because, first of all, presidents don't have Secret Service for life. I know we think they do, and they used to. And when George W. Bush was president, he signed a law that actually gave Secret Service protection to former presidents only for a certain amount of time, unless extended. Trump's time with Secret Service was extended by an executive order of Joe Biden, surprisingly so, and by Trump, ratified by Biden because of threats from the Iranians. He doesn't actually get it for life, though. They used to, but the law was changed. At the same time, the Secret Service agents are bound to uphold the law. So if a judge orders Donald Trump to go to jail, the Secret Service will go to jail with Donald Trump. That's actually how it will work. And that's not actually a hypothetical. Certainly it hasn't been done before, but the Secret Service is bound to enforce the laws of the United States. They're sworn to uphold, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States, not the President of the United States. The President is not a king. The President is not a dictator. The President is not above the law. If the law through a judge says go to jail, he goes to jail, and the Secret Service goes with him to protect him in jail. They don't keep him out of jail because the law says go to jail. I mean, that's actually the way it works. Donald Trump is not a god. He's not a king. He's not a dictator. And he's not the president of the United States of America, at the moment at least. Now, if he goes to jail and gets elected president of the United States, then no, he cannot remain in jail. He gets out of jail and goes to the White House. And then would return to jail to serve the completion of his time once he left the White House. But no, this is the thing that is, I think, driving both sides insane. And look, I'm really glad you called on this. And I don't mean to sound belittling on this at all. I really don't. It's just the president, the Secret Service complies with the law. And if the law says go to jail, he's got to go to jail. What is getting people on both sides tripped up is exactly this point. Donald Trump is a private citizen right now. He's not the president of the United States. Up until, when was it I used to know? Dang it. Y'all, I'm sorry. Brain fart. Maybe Truman? Maybe Truman? In any event, you know, the formal diplomatic custom, and actually it's still on the books today, we just don't use it, is that when a president leaves office, he's no longer to be referred to as president, but by the previously held position. So take, for example, George W. Bush. He was a governor of Texas. There are multiple governors in the country. And so the technical diplomatic address to former President Bush is actually Governor Bush. Barack Obama was a senator, of which there are many, and technically Barack Obama is Senator Obama now, not President Obama. The media shifted this, and I do want to say it was around the time of Truman. It was after World War II. Prior to World War II, presidents were always referred to as Mr. or by their last post held, and under diplomatic corps agreements, that's the way it's supposed to work. So Donald Trump is actually not even former President Trump. He's actually Mr. Trump because he didn't hold elected office prior to being president. And the whole thing was to signal that there is one president at a time, and once you leave the office of President of the United States, you are a private citizen. You're a private citizen. No special powers reside to you once you leave the office. You return to the citizenry. George Washington. When George Washington left office as president of the United States, he's the one who set the tradition. In fact, the Congress wanted to recognize and give distinguishment to George Washington after he left office. And George Washington is the one who set the pattern that, no, you are not allowed to do that. When I leave office, I am Mr. Washington. I'm not President Washington. And they were, I forget what his elected position had been, but people would refer to him as that. When Thomas Jefferson left the White House, he was not referred to as President Jefferson. He was referred to as Secretary of State Jefferson. And this has been the pattern in the United States. It is a reminder that the president is a citizen. The left is up in arms over this because the left thinks that the Supreme Court and every court should rush their decisions because of the implications of Donald Trump. The Supreme Court is not rushing its decisions because Donald Trump is a citizen of the United States. He's a private citizen like everyone else. He is neither greater than nor less than any other citizen at this moment. He should be treated the same. The government of the United States affords presidents Secret Service protection because we do know that as their symbolism around the world, they could be killed by assassins of foreign governments. And in fact, Joe Biden agreed to extend the Secret Service tenure for Donald Trump because after the killing of Qasem Soleimani, intelligence reports suggested Iran would love to do the same to Donald Trump. So Donald Trump will have Secret Service protection for life because of it. But in normal times, based on laws signed by George W. Bush, presidents of the United States will have their Secret Service expire. It's a great question, but it's premised on the idea that he's somehow set apart because he once held office. And no, that's anathema to the founders. It's anathema to the ideals of the republic that a president, once leaving office, should somehow be held to a higher position in life than any other American. He is as ordinary American citizen as you and me, at least in theory, even though people won't treat him as that. And I recognize people don't treat Barack Obama, George Bush, Jimmy Carter, Donald Trump as ordinary citizens. They get state funerals, all that when they die. But he bleeds. He's a man, not a god. He goes to jail. He's a citizen, not a president. He could be president again. He's just not at the moment. And that's something extraordinary about this. And it comes from the Roman Republic. We are a republic, not a democracy. We went the path of Rome, not the path of Athens. And, you know, one of the whole reasons that Caesar crossed the Rubicon and started the civil war that led to the empire is because historically, does this not sound ironic? Historically, the dictators of Rome and the leaders of Rome and the proconsuls of Rome, when they left office, were left alone. But they couldn't be prosecuted while in the office. And Caesar's opponents began to rattle the sabers that they would not give him diplomatic protections and legal protections once he left his office. And so that they made a big deal about wanting to prosecute him. And so Caesar asked for his term in office to be extended, and if not extended, to be given the guarantees that as a private citizen he would not be prosecuted by his political rivals who were becoming consuls and proconsuls. And the Roman Senate refused, and so Caesar crossed the Rubicon, started the war, and grabbed power and kept it. I also, as an aside, always think it's kind of funny where we always have these discussions in our country. Are we the fall of the Roman Empire? We haven't even gotten to the empire yet. We're still at the Roman Republic stage. How far along are we? I don't know. I don't think we're at the crossing of the Rubicon yet. Both sides want it to be. And to some degree, there's a danger there because it can become a self-fulfilling prophecy. Which reminds me, if I had to put my finger on one of the things that ails us right now, it's not just this, the third generation of bureaucracy, which I think is a real thing. My buddy Ben Domenech has a must-read piece of The Spectator today about Anthony Blinken and what an incompetent moron he is, and third generation bureaucrat. One of the things that I think is happening in our country right now is our internal conversations have turned deeply negative. You hate the other side. You think the country is headed in a bad direction. you think the country is in decline because the other people in the country you have to share it with, they don't share your moral values. So your internal conversations about your state and place of being in the country and the country's place of being in the world, they've turned negative. And we don't have an optimistic leader to try to change us out of it. You know, there are sports coaches. If you watch Full Swing, and by the way, you don't have to be interested in golf. You might actually become interested in golf by watching Full Swing on Netflix. But in their second season, they have the sports psychologists who are helping the players improve their game by helping the players improve their inner monologue. And it sounds kind of dumb, but you see it in action and you begin to appreciate it. There are people who what they say to themselves internally is negative. Now, I didn't know this, and you might not have known this, and it blows my mind to think about it. I have my brain spins all the time. But I got a doctor friend of mine, and he's like, you know, you can take medicine that stops that, like settles your brain. And as tempting as it is, because mine never stops, it's like, no, that's kind of makes me who I am. I don't want the inner monologue to stop. My brain is always spinning. My kid was asking me last night, how many hours a day do you work? And my wife said 6 billion, referring to me. My brain is always spinning. I'm always thinking. I've always got something on my mind when I go to sleep, when I wake up in the morning. The thought that was there when I went to sleep is the first thing there in the morning, and it keeps going. I was shocked to learn there are people who cannot think like that. If you don't understand what I'm saying, I'm intentionally, and my apologies to everybody, I'm going to be real quiet here for just a minute, and I want you to listen to what your head is saying just quietly. What is the conversation your brain saying? You made a complete thought, I bet, in your brain. Did you know there are people who can't do that? I'm fascinated by this. There are literally people who can't do what you and I just did. We did not say a word, and yet we thought a sentence in our head. There are people who can't do it. They have to do it out loud. And I'm shocked by that. It just total tangent. I was stunned to learn there are people like that. They have no inner monologue. It has to be verbalized for them to have it. And those are the people who talk to themselves out loud. I was blown away by that, but it's a real phenomenon. But in any event, our country's inner monologue is very negative right now. We don't like each other. We don't like what other people in the country are doing, who don't share our values. And we don't actually have leadership to like summon us to the better angels of ourselves and rise. And so everything in the country has become much more negative. And it has a lot to do with how we ourselves are perceiving. And you've got sports psychologists who will tell you that's bad. And they'll help athletes like stop blaming themselves every time they get something wrong, turn the conversation, make it more positive, and it really does help them improve their game. And we as a nation need some leader to do that with us, because our internal conversations as a nation individually have become so brutally hateful, not just to each other, but to the country, our station in life, what's happening. There's no love your neighbor at all in it, and it's profoundly affecting the psychology of the country right now. So much of what we're doing right now as a nation can be explained by our collective internal monologue about the country, when we should be thinking we're still the best country. It's awesome. Even with the flaws, even with the problems, there's no better place on the planet to live, and we should appreciate that. And yet, we've got the bank collapses. We've got the financial problems. We've got the interest rates as high as they are. We've got China, Russia, Brazil, India, or South Africa thinking that they can outmatch us and outplay us and build alliances and buy up the gold let us head off the fiscal cliff. Swiss America has been sounding the alarm on this. They're a trusted leader in precious metals and have been for 40 years. And they've been warning people about a secret war on cash. If you're interested in safeguarding your hard-earned assets from this secret war, keep listening for a critical free report, The Secret War on Cash. Now, Swiss America has been rated A+ by the Better Business Bureau. They can educate you on protecting your assets. You need to get their shocking report, The Secret War on Cash. You can check it out on their YouTube page at SwissAmerica.com/YouTube. SwissAmerica.com/YouTube. Also, you can get the report. It takes less than 15 minutes to read. You get a free copy by mentioning my name, Eric, when you call or text 800-289-2646. That's 800-289-2646. The all-out war on cash includes digital forms of currency. Just mention Eric when you call or text 800-289-2646. 800-289-2646. 2646. Message and data rates may apply.
You're listening to The Eric Erickson Show, the perfect blend of news, analysis, opinion, and cooking. Yeah, cooking. Join Eric's army of activists. Text ARMY to 33777 now.
Hello there. Welcome. It is Eric Erickson here. The phone number is 877-973-7425. Should you wish to be on the program, JD, you're going to be up next. Welcome.
Thank you, Eric. All this talk about the Supreme Court has made me wonder, after oral arguments, do the justices deliberate collectively in private, or are all deliberations done individually?
That's a great question. And the answer is, what they do is, after they hear oral arguments, they go into their chain, into a conference room, close the door. It's so ritualistic. The youngest member of the court opens the door for everyone else and then closes the door and is the last person to sit down. The Chief Justice reads the case, and they go around the room, and each person announces their vote, their initial vote. And then the Chief Justice, if he's in the majority, assigns who gets to write the opinion. If the Chief Justice is in the minority, the highest ranking justice in the majority gets to assign the opinion. And then that person begins to write their opinion while the others write their dissents. And they begin to pass their writings back and forth to each other and read each other's thoughts and chime in to modify, decide that, you know what, I don't think I'm in the majority now. I think I'm in the minority. I like their dissent makes more sense. And it's all done in writing. And they do have conversations. They can go into each other's chambers and talk. But they initially sit around the room after the oral arguments are heard. And remember, after the oral arguments, they've read all the briefs. They've read all the responses. And then they vote. And they assign majority and minority. And then the process begins to be a written conversation. And they collaborate over time. It's a fascinating process how they do it. Very collegial, by the way. Far less contentious than people would have you believe. Now, I got to tell you, Father's Day has passed us, but Independence Day is coming up. And Omaha Steaks has decided to do a 50% off sale for Independence Day. So you can get the steaks you're going to love at half off at omahasteaks.com. All you do, go to omahasteaks.com. You'll see 50% off site-wide. If you aren't sure what you want and you put Eric in as your in the search bar, you're going to see a variety of amazing selection for Omaha Steaks. And keep in mind, everything is 50% off. They'll recommend, because you can be overwhelmed. There are so much stuff. There's steaks, there's seafood, there's pork, there's chicken. There's ready-made sides and desserts. There's main courses. If you want to go check out Omaha Steaks today, go to omahasteaks.com. 50% off site-wide. You can get steaks. You can get your burgers and hot dogs for your 4th of July grill out, and it's 50% off. And then you get 100% satisfaction guarantee at Omaha Steaks. They want you as a repeat customer. They're going to make you happy. OmahaSteaks.com. Go check it out today. Put Eric in the search bar for some great recommendations.